7 Radio, presented by Silver7Cents.com. This is Peter Raymakers along with Mark Friese. How you doing, Mark?
I'm excellent as always, Peter. How are you?
Of course, I'm doing pretty well after an all right week for the Senators. Started off pretty not as good as it should have with a 4-1 loss to Montreal, but then they shut out Philadelphia later in the week, and then most recently beat Carolina by a score of 4-2 to get four of a possible 6 points on the week. What was your overall impression of those three games this week, Mark?
Well, that Carolina game, I think, was the most boring game I watched this year, including that New Jersey one. I'm sure that'll draw the ire of New Jersey people, but I really don't care.
I'm pretty sensitive about those accusations.
Yeah, well, you know, if I had to watch him play every night, I would be too. But I think the most telling part of the team across those last three games was 0-for-13 on the power play between Montreal and Philadelphia. And, you know, they wound up losing that game 4-1 to Montreal. They had seven chances on the power play to get a goal, and obviously no goals. And I really thought that was the difference in the game.
Yeah, and that was one of the probably the biggest issue for the Senators that night was the fact that their power play wasn't clicking at all. And the only possible thing is that the power play went 2-for-3 against Carolina, which is obviously a pretty strong percentage. Do you think maybe it's turning a corner, or do you think that was just because Carolina is the worst team in hockey right now, and that's why they were better on the power play than the previous two games?
Yeah, I would definitely go with that second option. You know, I really felt that the power play goals against Carolina were more indicative of Carolina than of Ottawa. You know, you can't discount the goals, and they were scoring at a pretty good clip there for a while. They were averaging one a game, but I still felt that was deceptive. Their power play just doesn't look good. I thought that the ineptitude against Montreal and Philadelphia was far more indicative of what this team has done in the power play as opposed to what they put up against Carolina. You know, they've been going for a pace of about a power play goal a game for a long clip, but still watching them, they weren't doing a really good job of setting up. And I'm not ready to buy into the hype yet, I guess, even though they put up two power play goals last night. It was against the last place team in the NHL. Not buying what they're selling yet.
And one of the things I really noticed about that Montreal game in particular was that the Senators, hardly any of their shots were taken from the slot right in front of Yaroslav Halak, who, you know, made 45 saves on the night, and that's pretty impressive and all that. But the Senators really weren't in front of his net taking the shots, where there's, I mean, obviously, if you're looking straight on facing the goalie in the net, you have a better angle and more space to look at than if you're looking at the net from an angle on either side. So what the Senators really have to do, and what maybe they were more effective at doing earlier in the year, is get dirty in front of the net. One thing we saw earlier was Milan Mikhailuk really did a good job of that earlier in the year. He was, you know, he's such a big body that he was bothering the defenseman down in front of the net and just causing trouble for the goalie. And even if he wouldn't get a goal on or a point on some of those power play goals, he'd have to get off the score sheet credit for just screening the goalie. And we sort of saw that drive to the net mentality when Nick Foligno scored what turned out to be the game winning goal against Philadelphia, where he's, you know, cut in front of the crease, got his own rebound, and put it in the net. But that's the sort of gritty play that the Senators really need to keep up with to score, and especially to score on the power play.
Yeah, you know, I wouldn't disagree with you, and I don't think Brian Murray would either. He made comments earlier in the week about the team not willing to get their noses dirty. And I don't think it's a coincidence that earlier in the year we had Chris Neal and Sean Donovan, and those are the kind of guys that are willing to go in front of the net, like you said. And now I think we're down to Foligno. It's probably not coincidence that his two best games of the year have come where he's been driving to the net. And those are the games between Philadelphia and Carolina, where Foligno did a lot to generate offense and scoring opportunities. So I just don't think the willingness to go to the front of the net can be discounted on this team. With Neal and Donovan out, other guys have to step up.
And that's one of the things that I think that's a big reason why Foligno was benched last week, was because he just wasn't playing his style of game, which is that you know, that physical, gritty, grindy sort of style where you just sort of try and power through guys instead of trying to deke around them. He appeared for most of the season so far, the early part of the season anyway, to sort of be trying to try a different game, and that's just not his style. He's got to, you know, drive through guys, crash the front of the net, and score messy goals like that.
Well, you know, earlier in the year, I really got, especially I got to see Foligno play in Phoenix 2 weeks ago, and he was doing a lot of the first step of the work where, you know, he'd dump the puck in and try and go around a guy and get the position on them. And then he would immediately lose the battle in the corner and just cough the puck right up. That seems to have gone away in terms of his game, and now he's going to the net with that puck instead.
So obviously one of the guys we've got to mention first and foremost, or second and foremost, is Alex Kovalev. You know, he scored his first hat trick as a Senator in the most recent game against Carolina. He almost doubled his goal total from 4 going into the game to 7 right now, and it was his first goal in, 16 games? The kind of offense that he was going to be looked to provide all season long. What's your take on Kovalev's play this week and, I guess, on the season so far?
Well, I'll tell you what. I hope that that's not the kind of offense we're looking for him to provide all year, because that is the most, that is the least amount of effort I think I've ever seen a player do to record a hat trick. His first goal was Fisher to Foligno from back behind the net. Foligno did all of the work on the play. Kovalev just sat in front of the empty part of the net and tipped Foligno's shot in. His second one was just a wrister. He was passing to Foligno, who was actually in pretty much the same spot Kovalev was earlier. And of course, it just hit a defenseman's skate and went in. And then his third was an empty netter. So, good on you, Kovalev. You really worked hard to get those three goals.
I'll disagree with you on that first one, because he did drive to the net with his man right on him, and he had to drive to the net, get positioning on that guy, and get a stick on the puck to tip it in. But the second and third goals, you're absolutely right. I mean, an empty net goal, even if you're racing to the puck at center ice, you still score an empty net goal. The second one was sort of a fluky one that got tipped in by, the defender's skate, I think. But he did have to display some effort on that first goal.
He did display some effort. You know, I don't want to knock him for going to that. And frankly, you know, when I think about it, you really can't knock the guy for scoring goals. That's what he's brought here to do. And however he gets them, they still count as goals on the score sheet. You know, I'm not a Kovalev fan. I think I've made that clear. But can't deny that the guy scored 3 goals last night. And frankly, is lucky as he was to have that shot go off the defenseman's skate for the second goal, his pass was headed for Foligno's stick, and that would have been a goal anyway. So as much as I've given Kovalev crap throughout the broadcast for his anemic play and uninspired circling of the net, the guy scores goals when he wants to, and we got to give him credit for at least that much. He put up 3 goals. He got the hat trick. Doesn't matter how, goals still counted.
One thing about the guy that I've noticed for most of the year is that he's pretty much always been on the perimeter. I mean, he'd get the puck, he'd control it, he'd skate around with it, but he'd always be, you know, within 12 inches of the boards, working the puck around the zone. He'd never, you know, break into the slot and or take shots from the sideboards or anything like that. And it was kind of interesting after the game last night, because he mentioned that he had an injury. I don't know if it was a wrist injury or a hand injury or something like that, but he mentioned that he had an injury for a little while that was preventing him from taking as many shots as he would have liked. And he said now, you know, he's feeling better and he's taking more shots. I'm curious if that might have factored into the fact that he hadn't scored a goal in 16 games, and hopefully will factor into a bit of a rebound and him getting a few more goals as the we get into the second and third thirds of the season.
You know, and that may very well be. I can almost see that as an explanation for him. And frankly, I respect the guy for not using an injury as an excuse and playing through it. That kind of toughness is something you'd like to see on the team. I hope that's the case. I hope that's the reason. But I'll tell you what annoyed me most about Kovalev in the Carolina game was his utter look of disinterest after scoring the goal. You know, you watch other guys score, like Chartner practically goes berserk when he manages to put one in the net, probably because it's such a rare occurrence, but Kovalev just stands there with a straight face, and, you know, Fischer and Foligno come up to him, and they're smiling, and they're cheering, and he's just standing there going, you know, yes, come to me, we will celebrate. And I'm going, I don't know if the guy's heart's just truly not in it, or he just keeps his happiness on the inside, but bothered me. All right, Peter, so let's move on to Jason Spezza. I have a theory. Would you like to hear it?
I would love to hear your theory.
Okay, so here we go. Danny Heatley prefers to shoot from the slot, the top of the circle, that area. You know, it's not a secret that Heatley is not a particularly strong skater. He's not going to be the kind of guy that's going to make plays with his feet. His game relies on, you know, the quickness of his release, the strength of his shot, the accuracy of his shot. That's how he gets his goals. And those areas of the ice, the slot and the top of the circles, are easier to pass to. Hence, Spezza gets a lot of assists when he's playing with Heatley. Now we look at McCulloch, and like you said, his game seems to be more get in front of the net, big body presence, which I tend to prefer. But that's a lot harder area to pass to, a lot harder area to get tips to. And though we've seen Spezza do a whole bunch of passes that tend to go through the crease, he doesn't have the assist total or the goal total that he has last year. So I think that he's not used to playing with McCulloch yet, no matter what they talk about chemistry. He's going to have to shoot more, and he took six shots and had a great goal against Carolina, but I think that he has to work harder to generate his own points now. And while he's picked up his defensive play, that offensive creativity for himself is not there yet. He hasn't had to develop that in so long. I think that's an area of deficiency for him. What do you think?
I think you might be onto something there. Whenever you lose the person you've been playing with pretty much every game for the last three seasons and replace them with someone who plays a virtually entirely different game, there's going to be a learning curve. I hoped that would be less than 31 games into the season, that he'd finally sort of start to figure out how to play that way. I don't know if maybe the fact that he was playing with Kovalev early on in the week maybe would have worked a bit better for him, because Kovalev can get into the same spots that Heatley used to get into. But I don't know. I think maybe you're right. Maybe he just has to sort of learn the places that Milan Mikalic or Daniel Alfredsson typically head to, and he needs to learn how to get the pucks to those areas.
So then Chichu scored 56 goals getting fed pucks from Joe Thornton, who's one of the best passers in the game. There's no argument there. You think Chichu belongs on the first line with Spezza for those kind of passes? I think that he might.
I don't buy that. I don't know. I kind of disagree with that. I don't know if Chichu's got the legs left in him. I don't know if maybe I can't even believe that Chichu at one point scored 56 goals in a year watching him this year, just because he hardly even looks like he can skate. And it's a different story when you're playing with a guy like Joe Thornton. But I don't know. And I think we did try. I think he was on a line with Kovalev and Spezza for a little while, wasn't he? For a couple games anyway. And
yeah, he was. But, you know,
maybe it would be worth a try. Maybe you're right. Maybe it would be worth giving it another shot. But
well, I don't really think that it would. I have to agree with you. I was kind of being facetious there, you know. But it's not like Heatley made plays with his feet either. So if Heatley and Chichu had a race, everyone would fall asleep.
And I don't know if it would ever finish.
I don't either, but Chichu might have the shot, and he just needs a setup man for it. But I don't think he's going to get that opportunity in Ottawa.
And I don't want to mess with a good thing, because right now, him playing with Chris Kelly and Jarkko Ruutu, that line's actually pretty effective. Been pretty effective after the road trip down in the Western U.S. and the Pacific Division there. I think they look pretty good together, and I think that might be a line that, at least until maybe Chris Neal returns, that Chichu might be sat on for a little while.
Yeah, I would agree with you. I think that they've been our best line some nights, which is pretty sad, but still good for them. You know, they generated a couple quality chances against Carolina. And again, the quality of the opponent has to be considered there, but Chichu rang one off the post early. Kelly got a breakaway, put it right into the pads of Manny Lester. Still, they're generating chances. It can't be denied.
So we should probably touch on the Alex Pickard, Chris Campoli situation. I mean, we had Alex Pickard was out for a couple games because he had an injury. Chris Campoli was in his absence, and actually Campoli looked all right, if you ask me. And then for the last game, Campoli got scratched and Pickard played, and Pickard was kind of invisible for him. What do you think between those two? What's your choice at this point in the season?
Brian Lee. But we know that's not going to happen. Lee is done with this franchise, and I guess we have to choose between Pickard and Campoli. I would say based on defensive responsibility, my preference is Campoli. I thought that he's played really well since returning from his benching, but Klusen seems to strongly prefer Pickard. I don't think that Campoli is going to have a chance here. Klusen implied that it was lack of power play production that cost Campoli his spot, but
somehow I don't think Campoli was the one to blame for Ottawa's going 0 for 13 on the power play, considering maybe second unit power play.
No, and I think the fault lies a lot more with guys like Dope Kuba, Jason Spezza, for the power play woes. But I really think that's just an excuse, and that
I'd say so.
Picard is Klusen's guy. That's the way it is. Like it or not, that's the way it is. And I think that we will see Lee traded this year, and Campoli will not be tendered an offer as a restricted free agent at the end of the year.
You heard it here first, everyone. You heard it here first. All right. I got $1 million question for you.
I'm excited for it.
We're 31 games into the season. Ottawa needs to make a trade. What is the biggest area that Ottawa needs to address right now?
I don't think that there's much doubt on this, Peter. I think that we need a top six forward. Certainly my preference is Peter Mueller from Phoenix. He's big, he's strong, he's fast, doesn't play defense too well, but I think that's more of the system they have in Phoenix than Mueller. I just don't think he understands his assignment. Unfortunately, this trade scenario only exists in my head as far as I know. So
he has been benched by the Coyotes in recent games, if I'm not mistaken.
He has. He was a healthy scratch, actually, the night the Senators were in town. But he's regained playing time since then, even though he's still on a fourth line and only averaging 8 minutes a game. He's still in the doghouse out there. But he's got such upside. I don't think he's a realistic trade prospect. There were rumors swirling this week, published in Columbus, that Columbus might be looking to acquire Lee for Filatov, but as much as that would be a coup, I don't think that's happening either. I don't know that Ottawa really has the package to put together to acquire a top six forward.
And Ottawa, I don't think Brian Murray's at all interested in trading away one of his high draft picks, because he's still sort of rebuilding this team on the fly, and I don't think he wants to sacrifice that in order to find a short-term fix. I think he'd rather take his chances with the draft pick than with a guy like Nikita Filatov or something like that.
I'd agree with you, but where would you identify Ottawa's biggest need as?
I still kind of think it's a defenseman. I think we need an upgrade on whether you think Picard or Campoli's playing better. I think the bottom line is that those two need to be upgraded, and we need someone. I mean, we like the idea of maybe Kuba and Carlson being a top line top offensive pairing, but it's not working that way. So I'd like to see a defensive upgrade. I'm not sure what kind of reasonable projections there would be throughout the league, but it'd be nice to see.
So here's my problem with that. Let's say that somehow we move, I don't know, Kuba and Lee for, I don't know, Cam Barker's been mentioned in Chicago. I don't think they do that. They're looking at Dumb's salary, and I think he has equal to Kuba and Lee's salary. But Cowan's going to make the team next year. So now who do you bump out? You're looking at, let's call it Philip Svolchenkov, because Svolchenkov is re-signed. Karkner, Carlson, and Cowan, Barker. Like, how does that trade make us better, Peter?
Now that, I mean, because Ottawa's drafted so many defensive prospects, like with, I mean, Weirkoff, if he turns out to be a good defensive prospect, Carlson, Cowan, I'm not sure if that's something that we necessarily need long term. But if you're thinking short term, that's our most pressing need. If we're thinking long term in terms of rebuilding this team, I think you're absolutely right. We need some more good offensive prospects in the system. But as it stands right now, I think Ottawa's perhaps not as good as you could be in terms of top six forwards. But the way Fisher is playing like a top six forward now, and he hasn't really in the past. Alfredson's playing like he's 27, not like he's 37. We've got Milan Mihalik, just he's slowed down recently, but he started the season like gangbusters. And Spezza and Kovalev, are they going to wake up one of these days? You've got to hope so, because even if you acquire one more top six forward, if Spezza and Kovalev don't start producing at a more productive rate, then it doesn't matter if you have one more top six forward, because you're missing those two. So.
Well, I'm not worried about Spezza. I really do believe he'll turn it on. I think he's still a legitimate shot to get 30 goals this year. Kovalev, not as convinced. But I would agree. I would agree that significantly better in the short term.
Can you start again from the I would agree? Because I don't know, I lost you for a second there.
Yep. Okay. I would agree, though. I expect Spezza to still reach that 30-goal mark. I don't think that Kovalev will, but I still think that Spezza will reach that goal. But the big question for me is, if you make a trade to acquire a defenseman, even in the short term, who are you going to get that's going to make the team significantly better that doesn't come on a long-term contract?
Yeah, that's the thing. It's not like we're going to acquire Thomas Cabrelle in exchange for Picard and Campoli and automatically improve our defensive prospects for the short term. But ideally, in an ideal world, that would be the area I would most like to address. So you can't always get trades like that done very easily.
Well, yeah, because most GMs are not
idiots.
Mike Milbury.
Yeah, same thing.
I love disagreeing with you, Peter. I think that this team is not a Stanley Cup contender this year. I hope I'm wrong, but without significantly improved play from every player, they're not going to be contending in the East. I can't see them winning a game series against Washington or even Pittsburgh. I think that we need to take a longer-term eye on the team, and that's top six forward.
Yeah, I mean, you know what? I'll give you that. I'll give you that. That's a good, good argument. Anyway, maybe we should wrap this up. Go on.
I think you had a question about Elliott that you wanted to bring up.
Did you want to talk about? Yeah, sure. Let's talk about Brian Elliott. He sketchy road trip, but he played half decent against Montreal. Shut out Philadelphia in a pretty strong game for the most part, and then against Carolina, iffy couple goals, but in that third period, he was far and away the Senators' best player, at least as I understand it. What's your take on Elliott? I think, you know, he played admirably well. He, I think, only had a .500 record while LeClaire was out, but I do think pretty much everyone from top to bottom in the Senators' organization is looking forward to Pascal LeClaire getting back into that.
I'd agree. I like Elliott. I'm an Elliott fan. But I think we know what we're going to get with him. He's extremely streaky, even as goaltenders go. He had a rough road trip, and then he turned it around and looked really solid. Against all goals. And frankly, I didn't feel that the goals that he gave up in Carolina were soft either. I felt that Whitney had two goals, both the Carolina goals in that game, and And I thought that they were both shots that handcuffed Elliott. There wasn't a lot that he could do to stop either one. He was just beaten by a defensive breakdown. And whereas Leclerc probably had the lateral movement to maybe get one of those back, he probably wouldn't have gotten the other one. So I think that Elliott's ceiling is probably a high-quality backup. You know, he's a guy that can come in and steal a game, or even two or three, but long-term, he just doesn't have that consistency.
Yeah, I'd say that's probably a good assessment of Brian Elliott. I mean, he sort of came into the season, you know, looking to prove himself as possibly a starting goaltender in the NHL, but his you know, this stint where he's been the go-to guy for Ottawa really hasn't inspired much confidence in the organization in his skills, I don't think.
I've just come up with a second million-dollar question. This is awesome. I hope you're sitting down.
I am sitting down.
All right, Leclerc's contract is up after next year. Lehrer is looking like a stud, although he's very young. So do you re-sign Leclerc and trade Elliott away as a backup and groom Lehrer to be the next guy? Or where does Pascal Leclerc fit into the long-term plans of the Ottawa Senators? He's not on a long-term contract right now.
The interesting thing about our goaltending contracts right now is that they are both up after the end of next year, I believe. So they both come up at the same point. At that point, we should know whether Leclerc's injury problems are bad luck for the most part, or if they're just nagging things that will continue being an issue for his career. We will know whether Elliott is the starting NHL goalie or whether he is the backup NHL goalie, and whether Lehner is ready for the NHL. I think that Lehner's probably... he might be lucky to make the AHL next year, considering, you know, development with goalies is so up in the air. He may be tough to make the AHL next year, maybe back in the O. And so if I say OHL next year again, AHL the year after, and then the year after that, he might be ready for some NHL action. I don't think the Senators, after Leclerc's contract comes up, I don't think they're ready to let him go yet. I think, you know, I do think Leclerc is going to be... going to be a good goaltender for Ottawa. I think he's going to do some good work, and I think they might re-sign him to another couple-year contract. That said, if he plays out of this world hockey and he warrants like a huge contract extension, and there's a risk that some other team is just going to sign him up on, you know, the free agent wire, I don't think Ottawa dishes out a huge amount of money for him. But it's tough to say. I guess when you have a good thing, you don't just let it walk away, or you try not to, unless you're John Muckler and that good thing's name is Daniel Charles. So, yeah, I'm bitter, but I don't know.
I would fully agree with you.
You know, Brian Elliott, I don't know if he's going to do much in terms of proving himself as a starting goaltender, and so you can sign Elliott again to a small contract, or you can try and find some other backup goaltender the same way Ottawa did with Alex Auld. Well, Alex Auld was a cheap backup goaltender, and I think those guys, you can find them once in a while in free agency, so... I think in a couple years' time, I mean, until those two contracts are up, Ottawa is going to be continually reassessing the goaltending situation, but we'll see what happens after that point. What do you think 2 years from now the goaltending situation is going to look like?
I don't think Elliott will be with the club. I think that you're right. I think Leclerc is probably the team's goaltender for probably the next 3 years, probably three or four. But I think that Lehner... I got that right. I guess I'm just high on the kid. I think he's the long-term solution that the team's been looking for. And, you know, that's based on OHL stats, but the kid's got it. And I think he's our goalie of the future. I think that Leclerc is a high... Well, I guess we can't call him a stopgap, can we? Because I think he's the best goaltender Ottawa's ever had. But I don't think he has a long-term, beyond 4 or 5 years, future with the club.
I think the Lehner situation you're outlining is probably the best-case scenario for the Ottawa Senators organization. But, it's going to take a lot of time before we figure out exactly what's going to happen with this guy.
Yeah, I don't think we know this year.
not just yet, anyway. It's tough to know from the OHL. And he's still so young, and he's still plenty of maturing to do. Anyway, we got... four games coming up next week, in Toronto on Monday against Buffalo, then back home for a game against New Jersey, and then the Senators visit Minnesota on next Saturday. So going to be another busy week, so should be fun. Mark, see you at silver7sense.com. Thanks once again for being a part of Silver 7 Radio this week.
It's always a pleasure, Peter.
All right, take care.
You too.